Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. Each week, we'll talk with key figures in agriculture and food policy, providing perspectives that can help you better understand important legislation, regulations, and programs. It's going to be a fun and informative journey, and we're glad to have you along for the ride. Here's this week's headlines. Lawmakers say they're making progress on an agreement to fund the government through the rest of the fiscal year. Negotiators say they have a framework for an omnibus spending package, but say work remains to determine specific funding levels and policy provisions within the bill. Those dollars can pay for USDA staff, among other things. In the meantime, the House passed a continuing resolution this week that will keep the government funded through the 11th of March. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he expects to consider the bill next week in advance of the February 18th expiration of government funding. The Environmental Protection Agency and Army Corps of Engineers closed the comment period this week for a new definition of a water of the U.S. Farm groups are urging the federal government to hold off on a rulemaking process until the Supreme Court has the chance to weigh in. The High Court plans to hear oral arguments on a case brought by a pair of Idaho landowners over wetlands determinations. EPA Administrator Michael Regan wants to create a WOTUS definition that can withstand legal challenges. And finally, the Department of Agriculture rolled out the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities initiative and says it plans to invest $1 billion in the program. The funding is set to come from the Commodity Credit Corporation. Republicans on Capitol Hill have expressed concern about this approach, but Farm Production and Conservation Undersecretary Robert Bonney told the House Ag Subcommittee on Tuesday the department is confident in its authority. We had the chance to talk to Senate Ag Committee Ranking Member John Bozeman of Arkansas, and he says he has some concerns about this funding and some questions for the Department of Agriculture.
Well, my frustration is I don't really know what they're planning on doing. They've had these broad generalities, but no specifics. So I've kind of, you know, stayed back and said, you know, tell me what you're going to do. And to be honest, I'm frustrated. I've been asking for this for months. And still don't have any specifics at all. It has to
what,
be.
What,
have
you, what are be, the specifics you've been asking for, Senator?
Just what they're going to do. Like I say, they've said they're going to have this plan, but we still don't know where this money's going to. They're talking about it, you know, helping sell commodities and things like that. But what is the specific plan? Who's going to get this money? So the CCC money, in my mind, is. It is making it such that this is for farmers. Okay, it's not for major corporations. It's not for major corporations to make them more climate active or whatever. This is farmer money. So there's going to have to be a direct correlation, and we're going to work hard to hold their feet to the fire. The other thing is, if it is setting up something that is somehow going to push farmers in a certain direction, that's not totally voluntary, without a stick, with a stick in it, then we're going to be very upset and do all we can to raise the awareness. The farm groups have looked at it. They're supportive. They would like to move in the direction of helping them in the sense they do a great job with climate now. They'd like more resources. I'd like for them to have more resources. On the other hand, we simply don't know what this is all about. When you look at some of the things they've done in the past, getting rid of stepped up basis, Waters of the U.S. coming back, 30 by 30, all of those programs, I'm suspicious.
But if we look at the use of the CCC in the past, particularly during the Trump administration, there was a vote on Capitol Hill that gave the secretary, you know, a lot more discretion in relation to how the CCC could be used. Is this a proper use of that authority?
Well, again, there was Secretary Perdue used a lot of discretion, but he pushed that into farmers. Okay, he didn't push it into corporations and things like that. So, to be honest, I still don't know. You might have more information than me. We haven't had any hearings about this. This is $1 billion. In the past, we're talking about $1 billion pilot program. Pilot programs are $1 million, $500,000, things like that. So this is very extraordinary. And I'm disappointed that they haven't done the homework that they should have. They haven't talked to stakeholders about this, as far as I'm aware of. And as a result, I think it's up in the air. So we'll have to wait and see as they come forward. But we're going to make sure that whatever they do, they have the statutory authority to do. And again, it's farmer-centric, totally voluntary, things like that. Or we're going to push back really hard.
So that pushback, as I'm sure you will remember, there was a Senate race in Arkansas that I'm sure you're very fond of the result, that some folks on Capitol Hill assumed that Secretary Vilsack was trying to use the CCC to perhaps exert some influence on that race, and that is when the authority was first restricted, was then loosened for Secretary Perdue. Is tightening that authority back up, is that something that would be on the table for you?
Well, we'll have to wait and look. You know, again, specifically what he's going to do, and you know, I don't have any evidence at all that Secretary Vilsack is trying to do anything like that. I think that he really would like to make it such that in rural America, in agriculture land, which is rural America, that you value added the products as opposed to it being an extraction economy where things are just, you know, they're grown and then they're out of there. What he would like to do, what I would like to do, is make it such that we have a lot more value-adding manufacturing along in that sector and do it in a climate-responsible way. The question is, how do you get there? And you get there by obeying the law, and you don't make up laws, you don't use authorities that you don't have. And I don't know that he's doing that yet. We really push back on the CCC getting into the climate markets, you know, as far as selling things in that regard. And we beat that down. You know, they're not talking about doing that. That was off the table. So, and that was the agriculture community standing up. So the agriculture community did a great job of defeating doing what was stepped up basis, things like that. So we'll wait and see. But I think if they go in the wrong direction, then things will be mobilized and we'll do our best to nip it in the bud.
We'll have more from Senator Bozeman, including his thoughts on legislation that would impact the cattle markets, right after this.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Welcome back. A pair of Senate Ag Committee Republicans, Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Deb Fisher of Nebraska, have introduced some legislation that would reform cattle market trading practices, and we have the chance to ask Senator Bozeman about his opinion on the bill.
Well, Senator Grassley and Senator Fisher, like the rest of us, are very frustrated. I'm a guy that used to have a bunch of cows. I'm probably the only guy in Congress that has an AI certificate, so I actually do understand these things. You've got the big spread between the producers and what it's selling for in the stores, and we'd like to lower that spread. The question is, how do you do that? The industry has kind of come together, producers have come together in regards to increased transparency, and we need increased competition. Secretary Vilsack is helping to address that through grants and loan programs, through his authorities. I support that. The increased transparency, I support. The question is these mandatory cash minimums. And so that is really up in the air right now. Farm Bureau has some concerns. National Cattlemen's Association has some concerns. Others are supportive. But it's one of those things that's a regional problem. Nebraska, Iowa, lots of cash trades. A lot of other states, Oklahoma, Texas, places like that, most of that is done through AMAs where they get a premium. So I'm very concerned. What I've tried to do as head of the Republican side of the committee is ask outsiders, to come in and give us good information as to what's going on.
The reviews on the part of the land grants economists, I assume you're referring to there. What have you learned from those economists at that point, and how is that informing your position on this bill?
Well, my concern is when you talk to the land grant economists, who are very, very good at this, when you talk to people like Cattle Facts, this and that, there's concern that this would not help, but it actually could hurt, that cattle prices, you know, might actually go down as a result of this. So right now we're in the process of trying to get more information, but we're all working towards the same goal. You know, we want to shrink this, you know, this delta to make it such that producers have more money in their pocket. On the other hand, the question is, how do you do that? And certainly, we don't want to do any harm. We don't want to make the situation worse.
There's been some suggestion on the part of some folks that are maybe opposed to the cash trade mandates, but support the things like the cattle contract library, the changes in USDA reporting, etc., siphon off that cash trade language and pass the rest of the consensus items. Had the opportunity to talk to Senators Fisher and Grassley earlier this week, and they both say they're vehemently opposed to that approach. But where would you stand on moving those consensus items and coming back to the cash trade language later?
Well, I'd like to get done what we can do. I think both of those items, more competition, you know, more transparency, would actually help a lot. The other thing that would help that we're working on is that USDA now puts out a lot of information, lots of information on a daily basis. The problem is nobody understands it. John Newton, our economist, who's very well respected, and talking to other economists, they can't understand it in the sense that they can, but it takes them a long period, you know, to draw it all out, put it together. We need simple information coming from USDA so that the average producer can look at it and, you know, get the information they need so that they can plan for the future.
And quickly, Senator,
I would like to see the things that we can get done get done.
Quickly, Senator, I want to wrap up. We've got about 30 seconds here before we got to let you go. But keeping in mind that we've seen the House Agriculture Committee in the last couple of weeks have a few hearings to conduct oversight of the Farm Bill, wondering, in your opinion, when should we expect the same from the Senate?
Well, I talked to Senator Stabenow last week. We had breakfast and discussed this. We're both in total agreement that we need to go forward with that. We're going to fire that up this spring. We've had some good hearings. We had a good hearing on crypto, which, again, through CFTC, you know, involves the committee. So I think we're committed to going forward and not only having hearings in Washington, get the stakeholders, getting the regions together, but also getting out on farms, getting with our producers, which is so, so very important as we go forward. Senator Stabenow, Senator Roberts did a great job on the last Farm Bill, tying all this stuff together, and had a record number of votes. And that's my goal, is to actually, working with Senator Stabenow, to surpass that, and so which is going to be a chore to do.
Senator Bozeman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now let's bring in our panel to have a discussion about some of the news that we've seen this week, in particular USDA's decision to fund $1 billion out of the Commodity Credit Corporation on climate smart funding. I want to bring in our panelists here. First off, joining us is Randy Russell with the Russell Group, Laura Wood Peterson with LWP Consulting, both very respected individuals in the fields of agriculture and farm policy with that special lens on climate issues. And Randy, I want to start with you. Obviously, the driving role that you played in the Food and Agriculture Climate Alliance, this kind of spending, this kind of effort was something that was very important to that group. But $1 billion is a lot of money, but we are going to see it segmented in a lot of different ways, a lot of different grants. What do you think we should expect to see in terms of sort of the real impact of this investment, given that it is going to be split off in so many different directions?
Spencer, first of all, I just want to say congratulations on the new program. It's a great opportunity, I think, for AgriPulse and your listeners. So congratulations. Look, we're really excited through the Food and Agricultural Climate Alliance that the administration came forth through Secretary Vilsack and Undersecretary Bonney with the $1 billion for pilots and demonstration programs. As you know, the Food and Agriculture Climate Alliance represents a cross section of the agriculture, food, forestry, conservation, and environmental community. We have over 80 members. And one of our key recommendations was exactly this, was for the department to put out pilot programs, demonstration projects for different commodities across different regions of the country and see what is scalable in terms of carbon and methane reduction and capturing opportunities. So we fully support it. We think it's a great first step as we move into this climate smart ag practice. You have to crawl before you walk and walk before you run. And we think this is a great down payment and fully support it.
Laura, we had the opportunity to talk to Senator John Bozeman on this program just a little bit earlier. His big concern was the Commodity Credit Corporation, in his opinion, is something that needs to be spent to assist producers, not necessarily organizations that might be standing up some of these projects. Your thoughts on the actual producer level benefit that can and should be expected from an investment like this?
Hey, thanks, Spencer. And I would just echo, you know, we women in ag are so proud of Sarah and kind of looking to this new platform as another exciting step in your team's efforts to keep us all informed. I say you don't have to outrun the bear, you just outrun your friend. You don't have to outrun a client, you have to just breed AgriPulse faster than they do. So I'm excited to be here today. I think it's a really good point in that we are all working for producers. And if you take a step back at what the administration is really doing here, it's, you know, addressing COVID and climate and competition together. You know, our resiliency of our food supply depends on nutrition security for all of us, which means not just what is grown, but how it's grown. And when you think about that, there's a lot of complexity to our environmental challenges. And this pilot project is going to take a neat, bold new approach to requiring measurement, reporting, verification for proving out which concepts are going to work the best to help us move post our, you know, 1900s ag input system. So I'm excited about it. And I think it's really compatible with the administration's goals here and how we look at, you know, a more equitable food system that's climate smart.
Mm-hmm. What should we expect, do you think, Laura, on the level of producer interest here? Because there's a fairly quick turnaround on what USDA is looking to get in terms of grant applications, et cetera. Do we have enough time? Does the agriculture industry have enough time to get farmers excited about this, frankly, before checks need to start going out the door?
Oh, I think so. You know, you look at a summer date they're shooting for. We've known about this for a long time, right? It was, you know, talked about a little in the campaigns, and then kind of this last year we've been preparing for this. I think producers are excited. I think there's a lot of conversations going on that are really creative for what some of our producers might do. You know, and it's across all crops and all livestock and all parts of ag, forestry included. So, you know, it's really covering that diversity of the landscape, and it's not just the diversity of the crops, but diversity within seeding mixes and diversity in how we think about growing multiple crops. So I think it's really pushing the envelope for those early adopter farmers who have been out in front and doing this. And I really think that there's a lot of excitement that, you know, farmers who want to, because it's voluntary, can, and those who don't want to, don't have to.
We'll be right back after these messages, but before that, our Hannah Pagel takes a look at foreign farmland ownership in the United States in this week's Map It Out.
You've probably heard about foreign buyers gobbling up U.S. farmland and driving up the prices. But AgriPulse's Noah Wicks explored the issue, and some of his findings may surprise you. Data on foreign farmland ownership was last released in 2020. According to the Department of Agriculture, about 2.9% of the nation's total farm, ranch, and forest land was under foreign ownership that year. That adds up to about 37.6 million acres. Some areas have more foreign-owned acres, which you can see here in blue. By law, overseas investors are required to report their land purchases to USDA. But there are concerns about whether or not USDA's report tells the full story. Some in Congress are worried purchases aren't being disclosed and have worked on language that would tighten reporting requirements. So the question is, who owns the land? investors from Canada held 12.4 million acres, which represented 32% of all the foreign-owned land reported by USDA. The Netherlands followed, accounting for 13%, and the rest of the top five include Italy, Portugal, and United Kingdom. When it comes to foreign countries holding U.S. farmland, China wasn't even in the top 15. Chinese investors own just over 194,000 acres. For a copy of this map and to read NOAA's full story, send a note to newsmakers@agripulse.com. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's a little bit more from our panel this week about USDA's Climate Smart Funding announcement and what it means for farmers and ranchers. Randy, let's take this back to Capitol Hill. Obviously, we've seen some comments on the part of a few Republicans, some Ag Committee Republicans in both the House and the Senate, wondering if this is a proper use of the Commodity Credit Corporation. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is well aware that CCC authority can be restricted. Any concerns on your part that this might be something that would lead to an effort on Capitol Hill to restrict CCC authority?
Well, Spencer, I think it's important to point out, first of all, the most important thing that Commodity Credit Corporation does is provide the financial assistance for our basic farm programs, as well as mandatory conservation funding and some export programs. I don't see this $1 billion impeding that basic function of the Commodity Credit Corporation at all. There'll be substantial funds available to fully support those activities. This $1 billion is not going to impede the ability of USDA to fully fund those programs. So I think that's an important point to make. I think number two is, look, the Commodity Credit Corporation, if you read the Charter Act and you look at its underlying authorities, certainly provides, in my judgment, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but I've certainly been around the Commodity Credit Corporation for many, many years. It certainly, in our judgment, provides the authority for these kinds of demonstration projects. So, like I said, through FACA, we fully support these demonstration projects. We think it makes sense to test market some of these great ideas that are going on around the country in various locations with various commodities, see what's scalable, and then go from there. So we fully support it.
Randy, I just want to quickly discuss, to the point that we talked about with Laura earlier, are you aware and are we aware more broadly as an industry of other projects, of projects that might be just around the corner and able and ready to be stood up and receive this USDA funding?
Spencer, to Laura's point earlier, I'm just going to be blunt here. You'd have to be living under a rock not to know that USDA wasn't coming forward with these pilot programs and these demonstration projects. It's been talked about for a long time. We, through FACA, recommended this over a year ago. Maybe the timing exactly being announced when it was and the 60 days basically to put in for big demonstration projects may be something that got a little people by surprise, but people have been planning for this for a long time. We have heard, I can just tell you from various people that we work with and certainly that we communicate with, there's enormous interest in partnering with USDA on these projects. So I think you're gonna see it oversubscribed, so to speak, and I think you're gonna see vast interest in terms of proposals put in.
Laura, as we wrap up here, comments that we heard from Secretary Vilsack in his remarks announcing this program really focused on some specifics that he was going to be looking for through these applications, including some measurement requirements that he was going to be looking to include. As the department looks to distribute this funding, what is needed to be known? Obviously, the conversation about how do you measure carbon sequestration is a long and rich one. Anyone with a Google subscription can know that. But what is needed to be known as folks try to measure some things through these projects?
You're right, Spencer. You know, a lot of these concepts date back to 1935 with President FDR and our soil erosion control. And, you know, you could show a lot of progress since then, but we sure have a long way to go. And I think that the limiting factor on these applications is going to be who can show robust and have integrity and quality and their scientific rigor around measurement and how that's going to work and reporting verification capacity, which really ultimately includes technical assistance, right? That we're talking about helping farmers here. So I really think the most important thing I read in the announcement was just how specific it was around MRV. I thought that was very new information, and that's going to require a really exciting space, which is our, I think, robust ag tech startup world in the U.S., let alone globally.
We got to wrap up here. I'll give you both 30 seconds to answer this this one question. I'll start with you, Laura. If you're a farmer and rancher, why is this news important?
Well, I am a farmer and rancher. I grew up on a farm in Kansas and started my ag career around age 5. So I'm in an equip contract today with my husband and our cow-calf operation. So we're a little bit of a petri dish as we look to help people think about policy in a real practical way that works for farmers. Why this is important? Because if we want to make more from our higher quality products that we produce, we need revenue streams that are supported by science and rigor and MRV that get us those premiums in our pocketbooks. That's why this is important. Thanks so much, Spencer. See ya.
Randy, 30 seconds, same question.
Spencer, I would say this. The key is it's voluntary and it's incentive based. This isn't the government regulating climate. Quite the opposite, is the government through demonstration projects providing financial incentive to producers and encouraging partnerships between producers, conservation groups, environmental groups, people in the processing and land grant universities to see what works and doesn't work in this climate space. So I think it's a great opportunity. And again, voluntary, incentive based, that's the key.
Randy, Laura, thanks for joining us.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Spencer.
Our thanks to Randy and Laura for joining us. When we come back, we'll hear from Hannah Pegel and a farmer from the field with a question for the AgriPulse staff.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
I'm Kevin Johansson, a beef producer from Lebanon, Missouri. Question I have is, I hear that federal government is supplying money to build up regional and small beef packing facilities. When is that going to be available and how is that going to help our rural communities?
Hey Kevin, thanks for your question. So the Biden administration has announced plans to roll out the first round of funding this spring. That's going to be about $150 million for around 15 projects. Another $225 million should go out sometime this summer. But keep in mind, this money is going to go through a complicated process. Interested facilities will need to submit their information to receive money. Then USDA will need to review those applications. And then any funding that is distributed needs to be approved by the White House Office of Management and Budget. What we do know is that Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack tells us he wants the money to go out to many different kinds of facilities, with some conditions included to keep the facilities independently owned throughout the country. If you'd like to have your question answered on From the Field, email your video to newsmakers@agripulse.com.
Thanks again to Kevin for sending us that video. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon next week. The AgriPulse team will be hitting the road. Phil Brasher will be in Houston covering the National Cotton Council annual meeting. Sarah Wyant will be in attendance at the National Crop Insurance Convention in Indian Wells, California. And I'm going to be headed to Orlando to visit with the folks at the National Association of Conservation Districts. In Washington, we'll be keeping an eye out for progress on government funding, as well as a House Ag Committee hearing expected to take a close look at USDA's Civil Rights Office. Stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for the latest on all the farm policy developments key to your operation. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.